The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale. Morning glory, America. Bunker High, Canada. Hugh here live in the Salem News Channel and the ReliefFactor.com studios out west, where I am for two more weeks. It did not snow on me. Although, boy, did they have a blizzard up north. And if you're listening to me in San Francisco, where we've got the big 50,000-watt boomer, you still don't want to take the 80. I put up the pictures last night of the 80, and that's quite some snowstorm. That's almost a bad day in Ohio. But they've got the I-80 closed in one direction. I don't know when they're going to dig it out, because it just kept snowing last night. Down in Southern California, just rained. I did my 9 miles on Saturday morning in the rain. I hate doing that. I didn't intend to. But it started at the turnaround point, so I got soaked. Nevertheless, we drove up to see our friends Irene and Rhett and the owners of BestHotGrills.com, and had a wonderful dinner with them on Saturday, and it rained all day Saturday. Then we drove to Malibu yesterday and saw our friends Terry and Monsita, and it rained coming back, and it rained in the morning. It's just rain, rain, rain. There is really no reason. I've tried to say to the fetching Mrs. Hewitt, you know, the shift is a little bit early for me out on the West Coast, and we're supposed to be here for sunshine, and it's not really the deal after the 2 years in a row. But you can take your wife out of California, but you can't take California out of your wife. So I think I'm going to be doing, well, I know next year I'm teaching at Chapman Law School, so I know that I'll be doing it next year, and then I'll take another year off because it's election year. But we got to rethink this. Oh, let's go to California for the sun, because that blizzard, over 60 inches in part of the Sierra Nevada mountains, and that was on Saturday. It increased on Sunday. Let me also remind you that I will be hosting tomorrow night from the studio, the Salem News Channel coverage of Super Tuesday, wall-to-wall coverage all day long on the Salem News Channel. Real-time results and an in-depth analysis begins at 5 p.m. in the east, 2 p.m. in the west. I'll be taking that 6 p.m. hour, so you'll hear what I have to say. There won't be any early returns. They may have some exits from which me to dwell. Yesterday, Nikki Haley won. She won. Nikki Haley won a primary. And I'm not going to downplay the District of Columbia. I'm just going to tell you it's not really what you're looking for. It's a nice thing. It's better to not win even one primary. But the District of Columbia, she got 19 delegates. She got 62.8% of the vote, which comes down to 1,274 votes. Donald Trump got 676 votes. This is the Republican primary. Why am I telling you this? Think about the jury pool in the District of Columbia. All right? The jury pool in the District of Columbia, where Donald Trump will be tried, in that jury pool could appear one of the 676 people that voted for him yesterday. It's possible. I think the district's about 600,000 people. And it's only usually registered voters. What do you think the odds are of Jack Smith not figuring out who the Trump voter is and leaving him on the jury? If that ever goes to trial, and it may not, because Trump wins, they're going to fire Jack Smith and shut that down because it's all nonsense. Not necessarily the Florida case, but definitely the D.C. case. Then I ask you, and I will talk about with Dwayne on the program today, the grand old pod is behind the paywall at the universe. But we're going to talk about Donald Trump's rallies and the chances of him getting a juror who will be fair-minded in Manhattan later this month when he goes on trial for the payment made to Stormy Daniels and the Trump. It's so trumped up. It's such an absurd case. There isn't a serious lawyer in America who thinks it's a serious case. But most of you aren't serious lawyers, and therefore you'll watch and you'll get convicted. And I think it may actually help him. I think that's priced in. Fannie Willis falling apart. That's not going to go to trial. The Stormy Daniels scandal is priced in. The Access Hollywood tape is priced in. And everybody knows about it. And it's kind of hectoring and badgering and pursuing vigilante justice by Alvin Bragg for political reasons. And people don't like the politicization of the justice system. They don't think it should work that way. And therefore, I don't know whether it's going to help him or hurt him or do nothing at all. Some people might not pay attention. But the chances of him getting a fair jury in Manhattan are even less than getting a fair jury in the District of Columbia. Because there are at least 626 people in the District of Columbia who would hear it from Trump's side of the story, right? At least 626 people. Now, it's not likely they'll be called for jury duty that day. But in Manhattan, I don't know that we got any. I know we have one. And we had two, actually. But they're not going to let Ed Cox go on the jury because he was the past chairman of the Republican Party in New York. They may not realize that Trisha Cox is Ed's spouse and Richard Nixon's daughter, and therefore they might let her on. So we got a one in two chance because they also, their son Chris lives there. We got two people who might end up on the Manhattan jury, but I just blew that. So I'm sorry, Mr. President, that happened. I want to turn immediately to what's going on in Israel, because this morning another attack came from Lebanon that killed one and wounded seven in a missile from Lebanon. They are apparently, all the victims, one of whom was in his 30s when he was killed, are all laborers from Thailand. But it doesn't matter. It's the invasion of a sovereign state by Hezbollah. And, of course, the IDF will destroy that rocket site and others to boot. But yesterday, Richard Goldberg published something, and I want to point this out to you. Put it on Twitter. Richard Goldberg is a scholar of the Middle East. He works for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, and he wrote it better than I can say it, so I'm just going to read it. Hamas cannot save itself from military destruction on the battlefield. That might not be obvious to everyone, so it's worth saying out loud. If given the order, the IDF will take out Rafah and eventually find and kill Sinwar in the tunnels. There are two paths to survival for Hamas: psychological warfare, hostage diplomacy, and information warfare, using its disinformation network, which includes the UN, to influence Western media and the White House. These are its 11th hour weapons, and they are wielding both of them. Given the trauma of October 7th and the large number of fallen IDF soldiers whose families want to see the state finish the mission of destroying Hamas, the psychological warfare, while still potent, Goldberg writes, is achieving mixed results. A temporary ceasefire with the hostage deal may yet materialize, but it will be due to several factors if it does. The information war is working with greater effect, particularly since the White House began its obsession with virtue signaling to Dearborn, Michigan. And that has opened the floodgates for ideological zealotry inside several news organizations. Boys, Richard wrote about that. I suspect the recent Harvard-Harris poll showing overwhelming support for U.S. support for Israel is also sending these zealots into hyperdrive. If any checks on irresponsible coverage were put into place after Israel is falsely accused of bombing a hospital last fall, they have been now removed or are being ignored. Editors and producers might need a refresher. The Hamas Gaza Health Ministry claims are not verifiable. The UN agencies operating in Gaza do not recognize Hamas as a terrorist group. The top UN coordinator of aid recently said Hamas is merely a political group. Several UN agencies have been found complicit in Hamas war crimes. Claims made by such groups in Gaza should be viewed, shall we say, skeptically, Goldberg continues. Many local Gaza, quote, reporters are stringers who have been exposed with Hamas ties. Again, strong skepticism is needed if that's your sourcing. John Kirby fought these sources and so many false narratives for months, but he has been overrun by the ideological dissenters within the Biden administration and the campaign team, which is apparently still more afraid of Dearborn. I got to point out, Dearborn did not destroy his Michigan result. Michigan swing voters and in every other battleground suburb. It is true. They're more focused on Dearborn, Michigan than anywhere else in the United States. It's crazy. But then again, Biden has no idea what's going on, so he can't rein him in. On October 9th, Goldberg wrote in the following New York Post column, October 9th, quote, Washington's support for dead Jews is nice, but it's not going to destroy the terror axis that carried out their massacre. The question now is whether the White House or Congress will support the living Jews who fight to keep on living. That remains the fundamental question. He's right. He's right. He's right. A lot more news coming up. I do want to let you know that be on alert later today, later this morning. The Supreme Court is going to make a very unusual announcement of a Monday decision. The court will not convene. They usually are convened when they release opinions, but they're just pushing one out on Monday. Everyone is guessing. This is the slapdown of Colorado and the slapdown of Maine and Illinois and everybody else who thinks they can run the presidential election because they read the Constitution. They saw the word insurrection in there, and they think that means Donald Trump. They're not very good judges. They're terrible civil servants. They're hacks. And the Supreme Court's going to slap them down. I hope it's 9-0, but not too sure about Sotomayor and Brown Jackson. We will see. It's going to be at least 7-2, and that comes out later this morning. Good morning again, America. New York Times put out a poll that caused a lot of Democrats to stay home in bed on Sunday. I mean, Joe Biden's getting crushed by every demographic. My favorite headline, the Times ran a number of stories about their big poll. Majority of Biden's 2020 voters now say he's too old to be effective. What a surprise, huh? But you know that, and I know that. He's infirm. He's incoherent. He has no energy, low energy Joe. He'll sleep all day Thursday. They'll get him up around 6 o'clock. They'll wake him up from his fourth nap of the day, and they'll give him some OJ and a couple of Red Bulls, and they'll throw him out there for the State of the Union. And I don't expect a terrible speech. I think he's good for about an hour a day. But 47% of his own voters say he's too old to be effective. Actually, it's more than that. Those are the people that strongly agree and some would agree. That's 47%. Some strongly agree Joe Biden is too old to be effective. Some would agree too old to be effective. 47% total. Wow. I mean, he got slammed in that poll. They're getting very, very, very nervous, which is why the Telegraph of Great Britain reports this morning that Joe Biden told the Gaza peace negotiators to, quote, get me a deal. He needs a win. He's worried about Dearborn. Meanwhile, OPEC has members have gathered to extend their production cuts to keep oil prices high, which is going to hurt you for the next 6 months. Up, everything is done in this race, absent some extraordinary event. You know, a stroke, a seizure, a heart attack, somebody falls down in public. Absent an extraordinary event, this cake is baked. I don't think anyone's going to change their mind between Biden and Trump between now and November, but we'll watch. The Washington Post came in with an interesting article. Rent is driving inflation. Rent is driving inflation. I actually think everything is driving inflation, including the cost of gas and your groceries, but they've noticed that rent's going up. Israel did not send a team, by the way, to negotiate in Cairo this weekend because Hamas won't give the list of living hostages. It's step number one. They won't do it. They also haven't proposed a ratio of exchange of living Palestinian prisoners for living hostages. Hamas is screwing this up. Now, of course, leave it to Vice President Harris to screw it up even more because she is the gift that keeps on giving to Republicans. Why she was in Selma, Alabama yesterday, I do not know. But when she was there, she did it again. She stepped on it, and she stepped in it. And we had the cleanup crew on aisle five. Kamala Harris in Selma yesterday, cut number 21.
And given the immense scale of suffering in Gaza, there must be an immediate ceasefire.
Oh, no, no. She had to walk that back immediately. I didn't mean immediate. That's what the pro-Hamas terrorists say. Immediate ceasefire. Withdraw troops from Israel. Get out of Gaza. Send us billions to rebuild the tunnels. We need the tunnels back. And the immediate ceasefire plays into that. It cannot be. There might be a ceasefire if there's a list of hostages and the Israelis value their hostages much. greatly. But it's their last card, and Hamas gave out a dark, dark hint that more than 70 of the remaining 130 or so hostages are already dead. So we're talking about 65 hostages, and I follow the hostage families, pray for those hostages. It's been 150 days. Today is day 150 since the massacre, and they've been held for 150 days in dire conditions, abused, and it's terrible. The Wall Street Journal on Saturday said negotiators say Gaza truce could be near, but obstacles remain. The Gaza truce is not near. That's why I read you the Richard Goldberg thing. It's got nothing to do with Israel. It's got the fact that Hamas, they can't even find Sinwar. He might be dead, or he's hiding so deep he doesn't want to give anybody any idea where he is, even his messengers. He's a coward. And the British ship, the Ruby Mar, it was carrying fertilizer. It sunk. It's an environmental disaster for the Red Sea. Iran's elections were held yesterday. What a surprise, though. Lowest turnout in recent memory because, of course, they're all fixed. I'll be right back, America. What a weekend for news. What a weekend. You're listening to The Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening on this Monday. A reminder, tomorrow, Salem News Channel will be covering Super Tuesday all day long. You do not want to miss it. It begins early in the day. It gets started at 5 p.m. Pacific, and it goes until 2. I will be there at 6 p.m. Pacific, and it goes to it's over. And so Super Tuesday, real-time analysis, in-depth results coming up tomorrow on the Salem News Channel. I've got to tell you, I've got a great sponsor here, Americans for Prosperity, and they have underscored again just how bad the Biden campaign team is. Because, you know, Biden's running around the country running on Bidenomics. And Americans for Prosperity acquired the domain name, Bidenomics.com. They really did. Bidenomics.com is bad economics. That is the brand new website that Americans for Prosperity has put together. And the president has, quote, embraced the term because he doesn't know what he's embracing. And his Cracker Jack campaign team, Laurel and Hardy, Inc., they are in love with Binomics. So they managed to not reserve the domain name. Boy, that's dumb. Somebody should be fired. Okay, we're going to do a campaign. We're going to roll out Binomics. Somebody get the domain name, please. Nope. Americans for Prosperity has it there. It's hilarious. They have actually got the real record that Joe Biden has assembled on cost of living, wages, debt, energy security, much, much more. They take Joe Biden's own words, they have to edit them, so they don't edit them to make them different. They just got to get the incoherent stuff out. They just tell you what he's told you, and they prove that Bidenomics is a costly failure. Absolutely a costly, disastrous failure. And head over to Bidenomics.com. That's a lot easier to remember than AmericansForProsperity.com. I think that's hilarious. Their campaign team is so bad. You'll find out, for example, that rent is driving inflation, which the Post has on today. And then you're going to find out the great news that OPEC and its members are extending the production cuts. You know, Dwayne, are you there today? Did you come in this morning?
Yes.
You usually show up once.
Yes, since we did the podcast already, yes.
Now, I want you to know I had dinner on Saturday night with my PhD weight loss non-observant Rhett Rasmussen, who is the owner of Solaire Infrared Hot Grills.
Well, one, he's not observant because he doesn't need it.
Stop this. Let me tell the story. Again, you and Campbell are starting a podcast, and it's going to be a nightmare for you because you don't ever let a story come out. Well, so Rhett and Irene run besthotgrills.com, and if you're going to buy
quite well,
a
yes.
grill, if you're going to buy a fire log. I saw their fireballs. We went into their house, and they're really cool. I've never bought the fireballs from Best Hot Grill. We've got two of their grills. But I've never bought a fireball from them. I saw them. They're very, very cool. Got me thinking about Maine, and it would require my son-in-law to be there, I think, because he could actually put in the gas stuff, or maybe Rhett's people do. Anyway, well, Rhett and Irene do not need to be on myphdweightloss.com, but it's Lent, and Brett's doing a Lenten discipline, which is harder by a lot. In fact, myphdweightloss.com is not hard. It's harder by a lot than yours. So
okay,
you should be in at least as good a shape as Rhett when you see him. So you might want to go to besthotgrills.com and ask him. I'm not going to tell you what he's doing. It's a special program, but you should send him an email. I don't even know if that's his email. But go to besthotgrills.com and send an email to the site. And you can also pick up those fireballs. They look good in Casa Duane.
I suggest that you get your son-in-law to put the fireball in Maine, because Maine is close enough to
Canada. No, we're on the water.
It's close enough to
Canada. There are buckets.
That if you put it in, it would be an international incident.
We have a Boston Whaler we can take to the sea.
Okay.
Take to the sea. I'm reading, by the way, you remember at lunch with Chuck Box last weekend? He recommended
Paul. Should we give the phone number out to myphdweightloss.com since
864-644-1900.
That's 864-644-1900.
I thought I'd tempt you into guessing I didn't remember it, but that was a trick. So go to myphdweightloss.com and go to besthotgrills.com. I'm talking about the fireballs now. I've done the myphdweightloss.com. Fireballs are very interesting technology. Have you ever seen them?
No.
They give off a much better look than the gas fireplaces. So if I install it myself, it's a sprint down the hill to the Whaler and I got a bucket. But there's a chance to take to the sea if it all goes down. And we're not that close to Canada.
You're close enough.
Which, I'm just saying, you ought to go to besthotgrills.com, get the best grill in America, the best infrared gas logs, and the best fireballs. And if you don't know what a fireball is, go look. It's really kind of cool. It's really kind of cool. It's a lot of fun. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt live. Salem News Channel is going wall-to-wall tomorrow night with Super Tuesday results. Begins at 5 p.m. in the east. Goes until it's done. I'll be anchoring the 6 to 7 hour from the California studio, the ReliefFactor.com studio for the Salem News Channel. So be sure to tune in. Wall-to-wall coverage beginning at 5 p.m. in the east, 2 p.m. in the west. Now, I told you in the first hour, if you heard that, Fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I were busy this weekend. We went out to dinner with our friends from besthotgrills.com, Rhett and Irene. And we went to the Summit Restaurant in Fullerton, which is a legendary place in Orange County, California, and a wonderful dinner. During that dinner, Rhett Rasmussen, who's class of, I always get it wrong, I think it's 83, at the United States Naval Academy, tells me that he's got a buddy who retired after his 20 and runs a resort in Lake Tahoe. Actually, in Tahoe City. I said, what's the name of it? And I don't even know if I can pronounce it with it, me in front of it. Grand Labakan. GRANLIBAKKEN. Grand Labakan Resort in Tahoe City. It's got a lot of different things. Bunny slope. Different things to do. And Brett was explaining to me that he was going to call his buddy on Sunday and see how it was going. Because they had a blizzard. And he wrote me this morning, my USNA buddy at Grand Labakan Resort in Tahoe City reported to me yesterday afternoon that power was restored after 37 hours of outage, and they have had 7 feet of snow so far. Their Rasmussen gas log set in their restaurant was burning continuously to keep everybody warm. I knew you would have to add that, Rhett. So it's true. They do give off a lot of heat. I think the fireballs give off more heat than the log, but I'm not sure. Some people like the log, some people like fireballs. But gas works when nothing else doesn't. So I'm here to tell you, I gotta think that you don't want to be on the grounds crew at Grand Labakan Resort today. That's not a good thing. You don't want to be on the I-80 either. And truckers have got to work. All right? I did not appreciate seeing all the comments about truckers stuck on the 80. What were they thinking? Don't they read weather reports? They were thinking, I got to pay something. I got to make some money for my family. Maybe if I get over the Donner Pass ahead of this storm, I can do so. And they didn't make it. Now, as far as I know, we haven't had trucker on the menu yet, even though it's the Donner Pass. But it was bad. It was really bad. They clocked 171 miles per hour wind at the Donner Pass on, I think, Friday night. Now, that was a storm. That's what would worry me the most. The snow getting stuck. Truckers are smart. I had my summer job for 2 summers with the wonderful Molly McGuire at Terrace North Apartments in Warren, Ohio. And we had a trucker and his wife, and they would go out on the road together, and they taught me more about truckers. And then when I read C.J. Box, I never want to read about another trucker, because that's the Lizard King series. But my friend the trucker taught me a lot. They're very smart. They know when to go. They know how to keep going. They know how to survive a bad patch of weather, et cetera. So I don't make fun of the truckers. They're just trying to get what you need delivered to you. And they're trying to get ahead of the storm, and a bunch of them didn't get ahead of the storm, and a bunch of them are still sitting up there. And if you're listening to me, you go, guys, you go, Giles, and prayers for your safety and getting dug out. But I really don't know what to do with that, because it was so much snow, I cannot tell you. But the Rasmussen gas log was burning bright in the Grand Labakan Resort. I hope I'm saying that right, Rhett. If you want your own Best Hot Grill, go to besthotgrill.com. Now, I want to add, I started to tell you, Ambassador Haley is a friend. I get along with everybody in the Republican Party. This is Republican Switzerland. No passports needed if you're Republican. We stop you at the border if you're a Democrat. We might let you in. Not going to let you in if you're Norm Eisen, because you're nuts. But we're going to let you in otherwise. And so everyone's usually welcome in Switzerland, but I get along with them all. Ambassador Haley was a regular guest on this show until people started voting. And I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it at all, because she wasn't available all of last week. She's not available today. She's not available tomorrow. So that's 5 broadcast days. Now, my audience, I know, is evenly split between Trump and Haley. And it's the largest guaranteed Republican voting audience in America every morning. The largest. You want to talk to Republicans on the eve of Super Tuesday, you come here. Now, the former president doesn't need to do that, because he's going to win by a landslide everywhere. Nikki Haley won yesterday. She could have talked about that today, but her team said, oh, no, he can't do it. And Danielle tries, and instead, she's on Meet the Press. And I roll my eyes. I really do think, in this country, people don't understand. Republicans don't watch Meet the Press, because there aren't many Republicans on Meet the Press. And I did it for 4 years, right? And I would hear the comments that Republicans are, one, in church, and two, they're watching Fox News Sunday with Shannon. And to get them to watch Meet the Press, you'd actually have to have serious Republicans on all the time, not no names inside the Beltway insiders. And they don't want to do that. They I don't know why they don't want to do it. But Kristen is a friend of mine. I like Kristen. But listen to this opening exchange. First of all, keep in mind, no Republican that I know, not one, is talking about the IVF decision in Alabama. Did any of you out there talk about the IVF decision in Alabama? It is not based, as some idiots on the web say, by Christian nationalism. Christian nationalism doesn't exist, and if it did, it wouldn't ban IVF fertility treatments. It's banned because Alabama law protects the unborn against inadvertent murder. Right. That's it. And as most of the states do. And a nutter or some crazy person, I don't know the details, got into the IVF refrigeration unit and just smashed and tossed out a bunch of those embryos, that the status of which under the law is very unclear. Catholic doctrine is they shouldn't be made. But most people ignore that in the United States. They're everywhere and they're kept for a long, long time in freezers. So some nut got in there and that nut went to jail. Because the IVF test tubes, or whatever they're stored in, I'm no doctor, were destroyed maliciously. And they said that's under the statute. And, of course, the only thing Democrats have is their hardcore pro-abortion absolutists, and they jump all over this. So this is not something I would ever bring up with Nikki Haley in an interview. I'd ask her, what about the economy? What about the border? What about guns, et cetera? Things that matter to the Republican electorate. So Nikki Haley goes on Meet the Press yesterday, and because of the blue bubble, not because Kristen's trying to be unfair, but because the blue bubble has been talking about the IVF decision, even though the rest of America isn't,
The blue bubble takes over, and Kristen Welker asks Nikki Haley about the IVF decision. We'll play the first part of this, cut number 15.
I think there should be protections for the embryos so that parents feel like they're protected and respected. But I think the conversation of what happens with those embryos has to be between the parents and the physician, period. We don't need to go and create a bunch of laws for something when we don't have a problem. There is not a problem in terms of what is happening. So we shouldn't have government create one. This is not a hard thing. When parents decide they want to have a baby and they can't, the blessing that Michael and I had to be able to go through the fertility processes to have our babies was a personal one that we wanted to have just with our doctor. We don't want to have that conversation with government.
You're saying that the decision should be between parents and the physician.
Stop right there. All right. One of the worst things I can find in journalism is when a host repurposes an answer to an agenda that is not the agenda of the answer. Nikki Haley gave a completely coherent answer. And if Kristen Welker wanted to ask, does that extend to abortion? That would be a fair, though left-wing question. But to use a Democratic Party talking point. So you're saying the decision should be between parents and their doctor is a Democratic talking point, as opposed to, does that position carry over to early stage pregnancy? Which would be a neutral, though left-leaning question. And this is why you don't go on Meet the Press before Super Tuesday. It's why you don't go on ABC This Week with George Stephanopoulos. It's why you don't go on Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan. It's why you don't go on CNN with Jake Tapper or Dana Bash. Because it's not that they're trying to screw you. They're not. I haven't seen, well, maybe George. George asked Mitt Romney if he was going to ban birth control. I'll never forget that. So there are some times that host is going to screw you. Kristen is not that. Kristen's a fair journalist. But in the blue bubble, you can't get the DNC talking points out of your head. Play it one more time. Nikki Haley, cut number 15.
I think there should be protections for the embryos so that parents feel like they're protected and respected. But I think the conversation of what happens with those embryos has to be between the parents and the physician, period. We don't need to go and create a bunch of laws for something when we don't have a problem. There is not a problem in terms of what is happening. So we shouldn't have government create one. This is not a hard thing. When parents decide they want to have a baby and they can't, the blessing that Michael and I had to be able to go through the fertility processes to have our babies was a personal one that we wanted to have just with our doctor. We don't want to have that conversation with government.
You're saying that the decision should be between parents and the physician.
Stop. No, that's not what she said. That's not what she said. All right. It's not what she said. It's a talking point. I just sometimes I wonder, but I really wonder at Team Haley. Do you really think you're going to help yourself anywhere in the United States by doing the Sunday shows on the Sunday before Super Tuesday and not showing up? You'll be on with the great one tonight, Mark Levin. You can be on with me. We have got the greatest reach of syndicated hosts. You could be on with Gallagher coming up. Mike Gallagher has been on the air syndicated almost as long as I am. Since Russ died, I have got the longest running nationally syndicated talk radio show in America, and I'm glad we got all these. We're closing in on 500 platforms. You got to count platforms now, not just stations, because it gets out over a variety of different ways. And I hope you listen to Highly Concentrated Hue. I'm going to put this segment in the Highly Concentrated Hue today. Let me just assure you, you are not going to get Republican voters on the Sunday morning shows. You're going to get them on talk radio. A lot of the young bookers for the campaign do not understand this. They think it's a great thing to be on the Sunday show. It's a validation of their existence. No, it is not. A validation of your existence is to say to your candidate, we've got you booked back to back on the national talk shows today on the conservative to center right side. And they ought to be saying great. And if you can squeeze in a legacy media left-wing DNC talking point appearance, that's fine too. Stay tuned. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Selena, good morning. Selena Zito with the Yinzer Report is here. You can find her on X at Zito Selena. You can find everything she writes at selenazito.com. Good morning, Selena.
Good morning, sunshine. How are you?
I'm great. Nikki Haley won the D.C. primary yesterday. She got 19 delegates. In all of D.C., which has about 330,000 registered voters, there are 676 people who voted for Donald Trump. 330,000 voters, 676 voted for Donald Trump. What do you think are the chances he's going to draw a jury pool with a Trump voter?
Zero. I mean, that kind of underscores exactly that, that complete separation of people that cover American politics and understanding that why people vote the way they do, and then voters in other states like Michigan. I just almost think it's really funny.
I think maps of America ought to come with giant blue domes covering Northern Virginia and Southern Maryland, or Maryland on the border, and all the districts, plus Manhattan, plus L.A., plus Silicon Valley. Just these big four domes that are impenetrable by fact and opinion not held by those already living within the dome. What do you think? The Truman Show times four.
Yeah. I mean, those are the super zip codes in our country, right? These are where the people that make the most money, they have the counties, the wealthiest counties in the country, the highest educated counties in the country, and these are also the counties that are in power in our cultural curators, in government, in academia, in corporations, in the media, and you know, they're very, very different from the other counties in the rest of the country.
Yeah, we could add a big blue bubble over Austin, and we could do one over Ann Arbor as well, and that pretty much covers it. Let me ask you, Selena, about your new column in the Washington Examiner. You argue that there is bipartisan disenchantment with Trump regulation. Why? I mean, with Biden regulation. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a regulation that's coming down that's going to hit two Cleveland Cliffs plants, in one in Zanesville, Ohio, and one in Butler, Pennsylvania, right on the Ohio line. It employs a lot of Ohio and Pennsylvania people. And this regulation will essentially close those plants down, costing thousands of jobs. And Sherrod Brown and Ted Cruz on the Senate side and Chris DeLuzio and Mike Kelly on the House side have introduced companion bills to stop this regulation that keeps them from producing this grain steel and is trying to force them to make a foramus steel, which is made in one plant in South Carolina, but mostly made in China, and would, you know, I mean,
why don't they like what is made in Ohio and Pennsylvania? What's wrong with the EPA bureaucrats? What don't they like about it?
It was so fascinating. This is they first got the letter about this, the UAW, Local 303. First got the letter about this change, this rule in the EPA a year ago. They have spent a year trying to get an audience with the Department of Energy. Zero, nada. They sat down with some people in the White House, and there was a lot of head nodding, but nothing happened. So Sherrod Brown and Ted Cruz have been incredibly passionate about it. It's been very impressive to see, and they got a lot of co-signers on the bill as well. People you don't normally see working together, really working hard to put legislation in that would kill this regulation.
Well, let's talk about Sherrod Brown, dead man walking in the Senate race. There are three great Ohio Republicans, Matt Dolan, Bernie Marino, Frank Lucas, all running to run up against Sherrod Brown. Sherrod Brown has managed to draw weak opponents and good cycles. He's got a bad cycle right now. And if Sherrod Brown could not get this regulation reversed, that tells you all you need to know about his effectiveness in D.C. He's a Democrat in the majority party with a Democrat president, and he could not keep these two plants open. He's got to go.
Yeah, Schumer, I can't believe that he doesn't have his back on this. I can't believe that Biden doesn't have his back on this. Josh Shapiro is against this. Biden administration will not budge, at least as of this writing.
Now, if they did, could they withdraw the rule? I'm catching a cold here. It's not in there. Would they? Is it possible or is the rule final?
It is possible, but it has been dead silence. And I will tell you this, Hugh, I think this is astounding. There's a poll that I'm writing about that's going to come out today that shows voters and Democrats and Republican voters on energy in Pennsylvania to just is crippling Biden. And I'm just stunned in the way that he has been non-existent or like the role he put in on liquid natural gas, the Weirton plant closing down because it's terrible. And now this, it's like they want to lose Pennsylvania.
Keep it coming, Selena. The invisible man, the infirm President Joe Biden, screwing Ohio and Pennsylvania and Michigan over and over and over again with his green agenda and his zealot kids running around the agencies. Zito Selena at X, her column is there. I'm going to try and retweet it, but for some reason X didn't work on this morning. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. It's Monday. Writer extraordinaire, columnist of the world, and commentator without parallel, Bethany Mandel joins us. She's also going to be a new school board member in Montgomery County, Maryland, come May, I hope and pray. Bethany, good morning to you. I have a personal question.
Sure.
Does Seth mind that I have you on the radio every week and I never have him on?
No, he doesn't love doing media, honestly. It's very frustrating because he should be doing more media, but he is not as narcissistic as I am and is not interested.
Oh, he's really fabulous on the commentary podcast. He's really fabulous.
I'll push him on.
I would have him on, but you're better. So,
well, you can have us both.
No, I'm just keeping you, Bethany. You can tell him, though. I think he's really good. I hear him every day, but I get to talk to you. Bethany, I have one question for you this week. The media is trying to sell a hostage deal. Hamas will not turn over the list. Joe Biden is putting pressure on Bibi. Kamala Harris slipped and put pressure on Bibi. Hamas is not negotiating. Do you think America knows that, given the coverage of this?
No, so Kamala's statements yesterday were really strange. She was giving a speech in Selma, Alabama, and she said, "We need a ceasefire," and the whole crowd went, "Woo!" And then she shifted and said, "There is a hostage deal on the table and Hamas needs to accept it," and there were crickets. So it seemed like she was trying to play both sides of the coin, but all of the clips that she posted online were her sort of pushing Israel for a ceasefire deal. But then in the next breath, which she wasn't publicizing those clips on her personal social media, she was then talking about how the ball is in Hamas's court. But what's interesting is Sinwar hasn't been heard from in a week. So they're not able to make a deal without his okay. And the last time he communicated to the hostage negotiators, he said, "Slow roll it, basically, because I want the fighting to continue. This is a war Hamas wanted. This is a war Hamas started. They want to continue it." And he said, "I want to keep going into Ramadan to try to spur the Palestinian people into an uprising against Israel. If it hasn't happened already, my friend, it's not going to." But this is, you know, this is a war of Hamas's choosing, and they want to keep it rolling.
Now, I am all in favor of humanitarian aid if it can get to people who are starving. Mm-hmm. I'm not in favor of the airdrops that the United States are doing because I can't imagine us. I want to find out if you agree with my analogy. I think it's like airdropping food and MREs into Berlin in March of 1945. You know who's not going to get that? The displaced person and the people hiding in the cellar. The Nazis are going to get it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, what's hysterical is there were videos of people opening those packages on camera. They taped themselves. There's Skittles in them. We're dropping Skittles into a Hamas stronghold. What are we doing? It feels as though they don't know what they're doing.
Well, it feels like someone called the Pentagon and said, "Drop something into Gaza so we show Dearborn that we care." That's what it feels like.
Yep, that is 100%. Yeah, 100%. And what's wild to me is I think they're overestimating what happened in Michigan with that opt-out vote. It was not this like sort of rounding denouncement of Biden's foreign policy as people are making it seem in the mainstream media. There have always been a lot of opt-outs. And if you look back and you compare the opt-out versus Obama when he was an incumbent versus now, it's not that much different. And it can be explained by the fact that Biden is a man that nobody wants to vote for. He probably doesn't even want to vote for himself. He doesn't want to do this for another 4 years.
I want to hear your expectations for Thursday night, and I want to frame it this way. George W. Bush knocked it out of the park after 9/11. That's when he named the Axis of Evil, his State of the Union, not the We Meet in the Middle Hour of Our Grief at National Cathedral. His second best speech, maybe his third, the Surge speech was second, came at the State of the Union. Bill Clinton always killed it, went on forever. He had to be ready to go for 3 hours. The bar is so low for Joe Biden. Will he get over that very low bar on Thursday night, Bethany?
It depends on what kind of amphetamines they can give him to wake him up. I mean, I'm just going to be honest and really frank. It's past sunset, and that's notoriously not a great time for elderly individuals who have a lot of cognitive issues. Heck, I don't even have great, main brain power after sunset. But I don't have high expectations. He's better with a teleprompter when people tell him what to say, but it's hard to feign that sort of level of presence that he has not had in a long time.
Yeah, I think staying upright and getting through the speech will be a win. But I got to tell you, I don't write at night for that reason, Bethany. I don't know if you do, but I write in the morning, and I write right after the show because it's the only time to actually hit the on button hard after you're rested. And he's taken most of the week off, and I don't blame him. He got a rough for an 81-year-old man to give a 2-hour speech, a 3-hour effort. I'm setting the bar at if he gets out of there without making a massive mistake, it's a win. Agree?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think it's going to be a really tough lift for him.
All right. Well, Bethany Mandel, follower on X.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Super Tuesday is upon us, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I am joined now by former Congressman John Campbell, who served 12 years in the United States Congress. He knows what Super Tuesday is like because California is one of the 16 states voting tomorrow. Minnesota, Colorado, Utah, Virginia, North Carolina, Massachusetts, Vermont, Maine, and Texas. I say tomorrow because, John, we're not going to get results in California probably till Thursday, are we?
Oh, if then. My gosh, California is so terrible. With the counting, you often don't get results if it's closed for a week or two. But I think the question, Hugh, is when we get up Wednesday morning, let's say, or when this is all over, Super Tuesday, what will we have learned? And on the Republican side, the main question is, will Nikki Haley have enough to keep going? Now, I've been saying for some weeks that she had enough money to go through Super Tuesday, and regardless of what happened in South Carolina, that she would continue through these 16 states, which in fact she is doing. But does she go on from here? I think she needs one of two things to happen. Either she has what I would call a success in depth somewhere. In other words, she gets a win or very close to a win in two or three or four states, something like that. So she shows that she has some depth in a particular region or area of the country. Or she shows breadth, which is that she gets 35% or more in all 16 states, so that she shows that she has strong support or significant support across the country. And if she does that and she has enough money, maybe she can continue. But I think that the expectation, of course, is that that won't happen, that she's not going to win any states and that she won't have that kind of broad support across all 16. So then I think the question is, what does she do next? And the one thing I believe is that I don't think her ambition will go away later this week. I think she still has some ambition, given her success as being the only person left standing other than Donald Trump at this point, that she has will have her eyes on 2028. So then what does she do? You had suggested at one time that perhaps a few weeks ago, I think you suggested, perhaps she would go no labels. The only way I see her doing that is if she thinks that's her best path to something in 2028. And why would you do that? Only if you thought that sometime between now and 2028, the Republican and or Democratic parties were going to like devolve or go away or become significantly weakened by what happens after this election and then in the intervening years. The other thing in the more likely scenario is that she decides that she has a shot at the Republican nomination in 2028. And so she stays the Republican and bows out, whether it's this week or some time from now, because even if she does stay in after this for another week or so, if what we think is going to happen on Super Tuesday happens, if what the polls show happens, mathematically, she'll probably be out by the end of March.
She might be out by the end of the 8 p.m. hour, right? Because some of the some of the results come in at 7. The California result, I'm going to come back to this one more time, but how many times were you on the ballot in California, Congressman?
I won 16 straight elections in California, primaries and generals.
And so you know about county. I just want to assure people, they're not going to learn on Super Tuesday night whoever won California. They're not going to, because they never, for whatever reason, the country's biggest state cannot count votes in the way that every other state in the union, with a couple of exceptions where they have power failures, can count votes. What was the typical drawdown you would get? You'd be leading on election night, November or primary night, and then it would shrink, right?
Right. I would generally lose, oh gosh, I'd lose 6, 7, 8 points between, you know, going to bed on Tuesday night and a week later when they finished counting all the straggling different votes that came in at that time. But Hugh, that was a different time. California now, like Oregon, is a mail-in ballot state. Everybody gets mail-in ballots, you know. And so it's different. You had a lot more day of voting when I was running some time ago than you do now. But the other thing about California, about Super Tuesday elections here is, for I believe 10 of those 16 states, the only thing on the ballot is the presidential preference. That's going to be the case for me when I vote in Arizona. Well, I have voted. I voted by absentee ballot in Arizona. Our election in Arizona is a little later in March, but it's just the presidential preference primary, as it's called. All the rest of the primaries in Arizona, for Congress, for state legislature, for statewide races, all that, don't happen until August. California has all of them together. But it's one of only 6 of these 16 states that has that case. For the rest of them, it's just the presidential primary. And if it's that, there's a lot less reason for people to vote. And so I think the turnout in those is likely to be lower. And I'm not sure we'll learn that much. Another question about Super Tuesday is, what will we learn about November from Super Tuesday? Another thing is, the of those 16 states you rattled off, the only one that's a swing state is North Carolina. The rest of the other 15,
maybe
states,
Virginia,
we pretty much know.
Maybe Virginia.
All right. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Certainly the polling now doesn't show that. It shows Biden comfortably ahead that I've seen there. But maybe Virginia. You're right. But otherwise, the only one we know is a swing state is North Carolina. And so if you're trying to get some clues for November, that would be the one to look at, or perhaps to look at the 6 states that have something more than the presidential primary. Because I know a lot of people looked at Michigan and they said, okay, a lot more Republicans voted than Democrats voted, and therefore this is good for Trump. Maybe, but But the Democrats don't have a lot of reason to vote. The other message I think we're looking for on Super Tuesday on the Democratic side is, does Joe Biden crest 80%? Some states have uncommitted as an option, and there's Williamson and various other people running. So if you want to cast a protest vote, I'm a Democrat, I don't want Joe Biden, there's somebody or some place for you to vote for. And if any of these states or too many of these states, the votes for Joe Biden are less than 80%, I think that shows a real problem for him within his own party.
I agree.
He's up north of 85%, it's typical. But
now I want to.
So these
tell
are some
our
of
listeners,
the things I think we're looking at.
More than a third of all the GOP delegates are up on Super Tuesday. Most of the states are awarding on a winner-take-all basis. California has moved to a winner-take-all basis. That is not what you ran under. They used to do it by congressional district. A lot of states have moved to winner-take-all. And tonight, the winners will be, you'll be able to tell pretty early on from exit polls who's won where. Did you prefer the old system or do you like this system in California? You're no longer
like
in California, and neither am I.
No. I'm in Arizona, but I like the old California system. California, everybody who doesn't live in California is thinking of it as a big blue state, which it is. And that, you know, I think Biden won by 31 points in 2020. So it's a big blue state, but it still has 39 million people. It's still, what is that? That's more than 10 million, more than the second biggest state, which is Texas. So I believe that California has, they're probably not more anymore, but it recently it had more Republicans than any other state just because it's so huge, even though it's only 25% of the people.
And they're, can I interrupt you? They're adding, Rick Grinnell sent me a note over the weekend. He's been running an operation for 4 years when he wasn't in the government, trying to get Republican registration up. It's actually grown significantly since 2020. So there are a lot more Republicans in red districts.
Yeah, it may be. It has. There's almost as many Republicans or more Republicans. I'm not sure what the latest figures are in California than there are in Texas. And so there's a lot of delegates at stake. And doing it winner take all, in my opinion, takes that gigantic group of Republicans and puts them all in one pot. Now, to be frank, that was changed last year by the state GOP in California, which is controlled by Trump voters.
And by the way, as Barack Obama said, if you can win, you should win. If you can change the rules, change the rules. And they did.
Okay. They absolutely changed the rules because I knew some people, for example, in the DeSantis camp. And long before DeSantis dropped out, this is last summer, they were planning to spend a lot of effort in California because they said, look, there's 51 congressional districts. We think we can win over half of those. And Trump may win the other half, but we can get a lot of delegates out of California by concentrating on the congressional districts where we can win. And they were going to do that. But the people in the state GOP were largely Trump supporters in California, even last year when there were, you know, 12 candidates in the race. And they changed the rules, figuring that Trump's going to get the plurality of the votes statewide, and therefore he'd get all the delegates. So they changed it to favor Trump. But I think, and like you said, they controlled the state GOP. They changed the rules to favor their party. Okay, fine. Or their candidate. Okay, fine. But I don't think that's the way you ought to deal with 10 million Republican voters in the country. There should be a little more nuance to it than just winner take all.
You'll be reviewing all these results on the podcast with Dwayne Through the Chaos on Thursday. But I got to show you one thing, Congressman. I went trundling in your old district on Friday. And if you look closely at the screen there, you'll see a voting official ballot drop box. Let's show cut number two. It's at the back of a parking lot in a relatively unlit area. Show photo number three that you don't really know it's there unless you know it's there. It's not anywhere where you would go, like a P.O. box or always on the corner. This drop box is in the middle of a deep parking lot park that no one knows about. What does that scream to you?
That screams to me that you can tamper with it without anybody seeing it. And so it screams that. And, of course, the other thing it screams is that's the main thing. The other thing it screams is we really don't want you to know where to put your ballot.
So number one is if we're going to dump a bunch of harvested ballots and we don't want anyone to see it, we're going to do it there. And number two is if you're trying to dump a day of, good luck finding a P.O. box that will deliver on within the allotted time. But you go there and we've got friends. It's California is so crazy. It's so crazy. Congressman John Campbell.
It's a mess.
Thank you for your Super Tuesday analysis. Much appreciated. You can catch his rundown on all of the results on a podcast with Dwayne Patterson, Through the Chaos. Look Through the Chaos on Thursday. He'll cut up and slice and dice it with Dwayne. Stay tuned.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.